Alright guys, welcome back to the podcast.
Welcome to our new studio.
Our brand new digs, Michael.
This is nice. We are officially in our own spot. There'll be some changes coming over the next...
It'll evolve.
...couple episodes, but we've got some sound panels, a light, a sign. Things will only get better from here.
Yeah. No, it's a start. More importantly, we're here, we're doing it, we're... Yep. We have a setup now that we've been promising you guys that we can be regular with the podcast, and that's a promise we now can deliver on.
Yeah, it's going to make this, like you said, easier for us to just Wednesday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, just fire up and we record a couple podcasts a week if we wanted to. It's very mobile the way we're recording this podcast. Hopefully it looks okay and sounds okay. Please let us know. But for how mobile it is, we could do podcasts on the road and... We'll be on the road a lot.
There's going to be a lot of travel. And before we get into that, since our last podcast with Jim Furyk, which I think you and I loved the opportunity to sit down with him and get into all things Ryder Cup. Yeah. A little bit of Furyk and Friends after that. But mostly we focused on the Ryder Cup with Jim. And it was, you know, in retrospect, looking back at that, it was interesting to... see his hesitation. We were both monumentally wrong in the score. Mm-hmm. We thought it was going to be an absolute tanking.
Yeah.
That the US team would go over there and battle them too strong, too deep in quality. My God, we were wrong.
Yeah, waking up, what was it, Friday morning, our time, and seeing the scores going, I know you were probably up early watching it live. I definitely
was. I watched it before I went to bed. Yeah. Because I was in... 8 hour time difference in Utah.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I started watching it at 11:30 at night when they first teed off.
Yeah, I did not watch it, but waking up Friday morning, looking at it, going, oh my God, I was expecting the US to dummy the Europeans, but you know what? We all know the outcome, and it was different, that's for sure.
No, fair play. It was awesome. One of the most enjoyable Ryder Cups for me. I don't know if I've Even the ones I've been to, I don't know if I've ever immersed myself so much in all the shoulder content that goes on around it. I think that's a part of why I love it now is because the coverage isn't your start and stop. You can watch the coverage and then you can go and, you know, watch everything else. You can listen to podcasts. You can go live from the Ryder Cup on the Golf Channel and all these different ways of consuming the content. I mean, it could literally just live on for hours and hours. And I never made it to my bed for 3 days. No word of a lie. I think I slept on the sofa. Like, I got little bite-sized bits of sleep, but I was ready to get up because I didn't want to miss a shot. And then I slept, you know, when the coverage wasn't on. I just didn't want to miss a shot. I loved every bit of it. God bless Sky Sports. I mean, they've done an incredible job.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when we watched it here in work, Sky Sports had the coverage all day. And like you said to Sky Sports, we have Sky Sports in the office. Mm-hmm. When the Masters is on, because it's UK time, we have literally the Masters on from 7 a.m. here till 7 p.m. here.
And effectively commercial-free.
Commercial-free. It's the best.
Yeah.
I heard through Golf Channel NBC the footage was not good. I did not really watch the Ryder Cup. I was playing golf instead. And... So I've heard, you know, the coverage wasn't great and some people were tweeting out like, where can I even watch these matches? Yeah. You know, so that kind of sucks. I know it was on YouTube a little bit because I did watch Sunday on the golf course on YouTube.
Yeah, they'd featured matches and stuff like that.
But yeah, I mean, it's the Ryder Cup is a fun time every 2 years. It does bring a lot of people. I mean, me and some of the boys here at work, we played a Ryder Cup. We just, you know, two guys, but it was because the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, Ryder Cup themed match, bit of match play, which people don't normally play of.
And originally we were going to play for strokes, but we ended up playing straight up and Patrick and I won. So, it was, it's the Ryder Cup is fun. I just didn't watch a ton of it this year. I don't watch a lot of golf. That's the problem. Unless Tiger's playing. And I know people are going to roll their eyes and go, oh my God, here we go. Tiger Woods. But he does draw my attention to play golf.
I mean, obviously, when you've got no skin in the game as a Canadian, obviously with European blood in you, right? But you don't, it's not the same. No. I don't think it is the same. Like,
it's no President's Cup.
The Ryder Cup is just such an emotional tournament for me personally. I mean, having been to four and I just, from the very, very first time I ever saw Ryder Cup, which was... 97 at Valderrama, I fell in love with the tournament. That and the Masters that year. Tiger obviously played in the Masters. Yeah. I had been to Open Championships before at St Andrews in 95 when John Daly won, and the old Dunhill Cup.
95.
Oh, you were what?
I was 3 months old.
So, you know, those events, you know, obviously never got me into it. 97, I got into it. You know, Tiger, Ryder Cup, that was what got me into golf. That's what got me thinking, you know, about this game and got me playing it. And those two things, you talked about one being Tiger and the other part being the Ryder Cup, has just stuck with me ever since. And I love everything about the event. I really do. So let's dive into it. Obviously, European dominance, day one. The interesting thing to look back at it, day two and day three were actually tied.
Right, okay.
For such a dominant overall result, the cup was won in day one, effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so they tied the singles and they tied day two. It was just such a, obviously, emphatic victory on the opening day. Was the scoring, how did it go? What did they play for? 8 points. Day one, I think it was 7.5 to 1/2.
Yeah, something like
7 point lead. Is that what it ended up in the end? 7 points? Maybe it wasn't as much as that. We'll check back in that exactly scoring-wise anyway. But, you know, it was one on day one. The Europeans turned up and from the very first green. Victor Hovland chipped in on the very first green. And the Europeans just couldn't seem to even find the opening tee shot, which was a difficult one. Luke Donald pulled a master stroke and flipped the order. Normally they play four balls, then foursomes, and he flipped the order, which, you know, was in hindsight a masterstroke. And it was just, the Europeans have this blueprint, a Ryder Cup blueprint. And one of the things that McGinley talked about in 2014 was waves of pressure, right? Because at some point, there's going to be red in the board. At some point, an American's going to hole a putt or hit a great shot, Steph, or make an eagle, whatever it might be. But you bring then another wave and another wave. You can't be perfect and you can't have constant pressure, right? But when somebody stops in your tracks, then you go again, right? Yeah. And it's all about picking that up and the players in the course taking that burden to then recreate the momentum and make sure you always carry that momentum. You know, and that was so evident that first day. You know, the US boys weren't without hitting good shots. They hit good shots. Mm-hmm. But after they hit a good shot, Rose would hole a putt. Ram would chip in. You know, Hovland would stick it, you know, stiff on a particular hole.
Was this Ryder Cup that had definitely had some of the highest winning matches, right?
The highest winning match, of course.
Like even was it day one or day two, like Rory and Fitzpatrick were like, 6 up through 9. Yeah. I think they finished like 3-2 or something like that. But still, like, I don't remember, and I would call that a dummying. I've never seen, like, who won? Was it 9-7 or at some point?
Yeah, Hovland and Ober.
For all the Ryder Cups I've watched, I've never seen a 9-7.
It's never been done.
So, I mean,
especially against the world number one and a prolific major winner in Brooks Koepka.
I know. Koepka brought Scheffler down.
Scheffler was in tears. You would have been in tears, seeing your boy in tears.
I know. He's had a rough year, you know that?
I mean, yeah, obviously.
Well, he's had a good year, don't get me wrong.
He's had an incredible year.
Guy's played decent, but.
You know, he's world number one in when other players are having great years, but if he could have putted even half decent.
I always thought he'd contend in most of the majors this year, and he really didn't.
Some of those ball striking stats were off the charts. So he'll continue to do that, and obviously the minute his putter wakes up, he's going to be a force again. So you know, no need to. He's world number one despite a dodgy putter, and obviously working with Phil Kenyon now, and they had been working. There was a lot made that you know, Scotty Scheffler's working with Phil Kenyon this week. He wasn't just working with him this week. He'd worked with him for a month prior to the event. So, you know, that was that. But yeah, the Americans seemed to have got a lot of things wrong in their preparation. Only 9 of the 12 made the trip. None of the team had ever played an Italian Open, despite the blueprint from the Europeans that this was a purpose-built Ryder Cup course. And the Italian Open was played there for years in advance of the tournament. I mean, come on. If you are the PGA of America, you're sending over your top US players go play the Italian Open.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Every year, if you want to be the team that bring it back to the US shores, the first away win in 30 years, you do things that haven't been done before.
Yeah.
This team didn't do things that hadn't been done before.
Right.
So they got the same result they had always got. Do the same thing, get the same result, right? We know that one. Lots made in the media about, obviously, money and Cantley and Xander being, you know, off in their own little kind of, you know, world. That appears to have been utter nonsense, yeah. Which I'm, you know, happy to hear that. Everyone's saying, despite, again, rumours of about a fractured team room, one of the best team rooms in the history of Ryder Cups, and that's coming from guys like Stricker and those guys. It's not just the players. So it's none of that stuff. It's none of the external stuff. Europe played better.
Yeah, yeah.
Europe were better prepared. You know, they seemed to get the pairings right, and that's a big part of it, you know.
Pairings were very strong. Even for, like, yeah. the young bucks, like, when I say young bucks, the rookies, like, that Ludvig Åberg, like, he didn't, some say he didn't play amazingly all week, but the boy showed up when he had to hit shots, which is nice.
The perfect example of why the pairings worked was Bob McIntyre.
Yeah.
Bob never played well.
Yeah.
He really struggled. Strokes gained show how much he struggled that week. He really struggled. He got 2.5 points as a rookie because the pairing was perfect, right? And he played pretty good against Wyndham Clark in the last day. I saw the strokes gained on Data Golf, and he played pretty good against Wyndham Clark. He was, I think he was maybe 3 under par or something like that when he won. That's on my phone. So, he, you know, that's a perfect example of getting the pairing right. A player that is not playing his best, but is still collecting points for you. I mean, what an incredible rookie debut, 2.5 points from three.
Plus, I think him having that father figure of, like, incredible. Justin Rose, or grandfather figure of Justin Rose, definitely carried him through, like,
but
that's important.
The European blueprint is that didn't start this week. That okay, Bob, this is your pod of players and you might end up playing with Justin. Like, they've been bonding for months, knowing that their games were going to match up quite well, and how much Justin was a senior figure on the team and that type of thing. And Bob obviously turned up without his game. For the most part, I think it's maybe, you know, he done good things at the right times. Mm. He just maybe wasn't, especially his putting, wasn't as strong as he would have liked it to be. But
you made an interesting comment of a podcast you listened to, though, and you think this is probably a reason the US kind of struggled with the No Laying Up podcast.
Yeah.
Max Homa was on this podcast, and you thought it was maybe an attitude or ego that kind of not divided the team, but ended up being their kind of demise to maybe winning the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of Sully put it on Max that, like, the Europeans seem to have this deeper bond, and, you know, when they have these hype videos, and, like, that's another reason I love the week, is because you see all these videos and it's the 2 minutes. You sent me one recently.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Ian was playing in an event,
Club Championships,
and the first day said he wasn't putting well or anything like that, and then it was a Ryder Cup, or it was like a match play the next. Yeah. I sent him the 2018 European, and those are the best videos. Oh, like, they are.
I mean,
I like a motivational video, not as much as
hairs,
you do.
The hairs are up in the.
But
the
that, arm with that those videos from, you know, 2018, you have, you know, Sam Torrance and all those guys talking, and, you know, I'd love to see an unedited version of Sam Torrance giving a speech, because I'm sure there's a lot of great Scottish slang in there. Mm. But those videos are the best.
They're amazing. So, yeah, Homa in that video talked about, Sully talked about those videos with Homa, and, you know, he asked, like, what was it like inside the team room? Did you guys have your hype videos? We've obviously heard things from the European team that, you know, Justin Rose went around all the families and got clips from, you know, people within,
the
people that
are meaningful,
yeah, all that sort of stuff, like trying to really build a connection. And Homa said, yeah, no, we don't really do that. But, you know, our team captain's done a really good job of letting us know and reminding us how good we were as players. And I'm just listening to that going, okay, so one team makes about Seve, Europe, you know, our families. So effectively, you're doing this for someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
A bigger thing than yourself, right? And you hear that in the Ryder Cup a lot. You know, you are... this is bigger than you. Yet the US team want to make it about, you know, you're a great player. We've got to remind ourselves that we're America and we're the best players in the world. And it's like, that ego is just why the Europeans can level up and make themselves so inspired in those moments.
Definitely a fine line between amping yourself up and being maybe a bit arrogant. You look at someone like Kepka, he's very big into like self-talk, self-confidence, but he comes across sometimes as a douchebag. And that's where I see it. Like there is times where you're just like, you know, you'll say, you're like, God, I can't stand that guy.
Brutal.
But then there's other times where I think and go, okay, the guy, all he says is he practices only for majors. Yeah. Now, I don't believe that because the guy's a professional golfer, but he does show up in these major events. And you're like, okay, maybe the guy, this self-talk is, I just want to win the best events. Yeah. And he doesn't want to win, no offense, the RBC Canadian Open or the Sanderson's Farms or the Chiquita Banana Classic. Like, he doesn't want to win any of that. He just wants to win the Masters, the PGA, the Open, the US Open, Ryder Cups, President's Cups. That's all that matters to him, which I don't think is wrong, but you got to do it where you don't come across as a D-bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we can say that on the podcast, but it's a new word we can say.
Oh, who says? We make the rules in here.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so that to me was huge. I think I watched the opening ceremony, another part of the Ryder Cup I love. Like, I literally watch every second of every part. Like, the opening ceremony is one of my favourite parts. Jack Johnson gets up there, not a comfortable public speaker, you can tell.
You can tell, yeah. He's awkward. Like me in the podium.
You know, he's kind of shuffling the papers.
Scrambling. You know what I noticed with Zach Johnson? And I know where you're going with this. But Zach Johnson, he said 6 words and took a break. Six words. Yeah. And that is a public speaking. We had to do public speaking in high school. I'm sure you had to do public speaking in high school as well. Anyways, we had to do it to write a speech. I used the same speech for 5 years. Mm. And believe it or not, the speech was on Tiger Woods. Shocker. And I would be like this every year. And I eventually knew the speech off by heart.
Right.
But I'd still shake. I'd still freak out. Mm. And they always said, oh, go 6 words at a time. And it will kind of build some. And that's what Zach Johnson is. But it sounds awful when you do it. But then you get guys like Luke Donald. And I know where you're going with this. Guy bursts out in Italian.
And does it with 2 hands on the desk.
Memorized.
And is kind of like posture forward.
Dictator-like.
Like I'm talking to you people. And I'm talking to you in Italian right now. And I'm not going to miss a beat. And it's going to be fluent. Right? If you are a European Ryder Cup team member and you see that's your leader.
You're like, holy.
You're like, if he's prepared this well. Like, we must have the best parents. We must have the best course set up. We must have the best amenities in our team room. Like, this guy hasn't overlooked any single detail.
Yeah.
You know, I watched an amazing piece of show of content on Sky Sports. It was Nick Doherty and it was Monty McGinley and Sam Torrance.
They were actually eating.
It was amazing. All courses.
At one point, they're all talking. I think Sam Torrance is like eating a piece of beef. Like, this, I think the dinner part's fake, Sam.
But like, they were talking about Monty's captaincy and at Ryder Cup Celtic Manor in 2010, and talked about how he switched out all the beds. Right, got the 5-foot beds taken out, got the 6-foot beds put in, and you know all the players were like, "Wow, like Monty's, he's really looking after your this bed. Week. Have you 5-foot one? Have you bunk bed?" And so he put in 6-foot beds for the team, and it was just like all that week, like the players felt like all the details were there, you know, just all taken care of and stuff like that. And, you know, it just those things. And it's like, it's a player, like all those little 1%. We always talk about, you know, aggregation of marginal gains. Yeah, like, it's incredible. It's just, it's an amazing. And as I say, Team Europe have this binder that is now. Is now part of the success Bible for the European team. So I just think the battle between the captains, there was people always used the term like quietly confident with Luke Donald. I think Zach Johnson, I think he was sort of almost not scared, but just he didn't want to ruffle the feathers of his players. Like, you lose the first day 7.5-0.5, and you stand up and say, you know, I'm still so proud of how my team performed. I mean, come on,
I would say if you're a Ryder, U.S. Ryder Cup team, and this is no knock on Zach Johnson, but if you're a U.S. Ryder Cup team and you're trying to win for the first time in 30 years on European soil, you do not put a rookie captain. Now,
the counter argument to that is 2014 when they took Tom Watson. That's why they took Tom Watson. Because like somebody loved in all the Open Championship wins, I think five Open Championship wins, that was not his first captaincy. So they've walked that path. So they've tried that. But to your point though, is Zach Johnson the right guy? Whether it's a rookie or whether it's not, I mean, it is a cyclical thing. It tends to be a new captain all the time, especially when you've got as many obviously potential candidates as the US team have. I don't know if that's a big factor, but you know, I don't think he was the right guy. Really, really don't.
So the next Ryder Cup captains then?
It's going to be Tiger.
Tiger for sure.
It's going to be Tiger
in New York.
Yep. Actually, and people are talking about the likelihood is yes. It's so close.
So close.
Closest we'll ever get to home game.
Yeah, be my first Ryder Cup.
I mean, what a place to experience it.
Busy couple of years. I will be going. We are definitely going to go to the Presidents Cup, even if it's for a day. Yeah, it's in Montreal.
Be good. That would be definitely good.
But Ryder Cup captain being the Tiger being the captain.
Well, there's talk of giving them double captaincy as well. They're talking about giving them giving them the home and away.
Oh wow!
Talk about Ireland and Adair Manor is the next.
Think Rory will be the away captain for that? Playing captain?
No, Rory. No, I don't.
How old will he be in 2027? How old is he now? 33.
Roars?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I think he's 33 or 34. So in 2027?
Yeah, maybe about that.
He'll be an old man. 40. Oof.
He won't even... Oof. He'll still have three, maybe four Ryder Cups left in him at that point.
Did you hear in that after the Ryder Cup, the post-conference, he was like, oh, you know, Bob's got 12 in him. I might have two or three. Now I'm like, pal, you're 33 years old. Like... And you're probably one of the fittest golfer athletes in the world. Mm-hmm. Your back's not humped. Your legs aren't humped.
You hit it long, so it will take it's a bit like the last thing to go from a golfer's is punch. Like he'll have length.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
He'll always hit it long enough.
Good ball striker.
You know, really, really good.
The only thing really that can hurt Rory is putting sometimes is stinker.
Yeah. But you know, if he starts to lose some things, you never know if that's a bit of a bit of a kind of trade. He's not going anywhere. I don't see that. I do think there is a generational problem with the European captaincy, though.
Yeah, we talked about that because we were like, you know,
down the chain?
Who would be the next captain?
Well, you've lost a generation because you've lost Westy, Poulter, Sergio, McDowell.
Casey.
Yeah, you've lost 10 years of captains right there. So in that 10 years, yeah, you know, you probably are starting to think at that point, okay, Jay Rose will get a chance. Rory might go, you know, at some point, you know, after that, et cetera, et cetera.
I think the other thing too is I'm sure guys like Harrington and probably Darren Clark and a couple of those boys, they'll probably get the call again to be like, hey, you want to do it one more time? Stenson, they lost Stenson.
Lost Stenson. Right? That's another one.
Because he should have been the captain this year. Yeah. I mean, it's a shame to see Sergio and Poulter not, and I will say like Poulter was very quiet during the week. He made some nice comments and he's like, here's the best of the Ryder Cup team and stuff. Deep downside is killing him. He's not there or being a part of it in any way. I guess you have like Nick Kolsertz and those Italian
Poulter
boys.
Poulter should have been and would have been a vice captain. I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where the next one comes from in Bethpage. On the European side, I don't think that's that easy. I think you might have to go back into a previous captain for a couple. I don't think there's a... Like, if it was me, I'd give it to Luke Donald again.
Yeah.
I'd give it to him. He's, you know, obviously based himself in the US. He went to college at Northwestern. You know, he has an affinity. Yeah, yeah. You know, obviously New York's going to be... Especially if Tiger's a captain, it's going to be very partisan. So, but... I think for that European team, for everything that goes against you in an away Ryder Cup, I'd keep it the same.
Yeah.
You hear Rory, you know, on the podium, two more years.
Yeah.
Right? They want it immediately.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like a presidency in a way. You might not get a lot done in the first year. Okay, he was successful.
And he only got half.
He only got half because of the live. So, Yeah, you give it to him for another 2 years and really give him a chance to...
That's what's going
to
happen.
To plan it, to be good.
I'd do it.
Speaking of player connection, Rory almost made a connection with Joel Lukavich's chin. I'll tell you, I would not want to scrap Rory and... Well, who are you kidding? I don't want to scrap at all. I'm a lover, not a fighter, but...
A drinker.
You would not want to scrap Rory in a bar.
I honestly think Rory would
He'd rip your face off.
No, he'd be weak as water.
I don't think so.
Definitely. Like, yeah.
He's Irish.
Nah.
Couple pints in him, boof. Done.
Rory missed the part of his childhood where you that is instilled in you, that sort of like
toughness.
Roughness and toughness. He was too busy being the best golfer on the planet at his age. That doesn't, you know, he has a kind of like a toughness just out of probably competitiveness, but he doesn't, that's not a real roughness. You could kind of see a little bit of that in that, you know, just shouting then. Like, how easily he get pushed into his car.
No, by Shane.
That was like shuffled into his car.
I think his wife said, get the...
Like, if that's somebody who wants a fight, you're literally ripping the shirt off their back.
True.
Right? So, yeah, I didn't think that was going
to
ever
be... To be fair, the whole argument with Lukava, you know, going like this, was he really in his line?
He was out of line and way too close. Like, insanely close.
Yeah.
And dude, at him. And then you know, and then he stepped back to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then gave him that one and told a few people to...
He got too excited. I'll tell you one thing. If Joe Lukava was on Tiger's bag and he did that, he would not be on Tiger's bag the next day, I guarantee you. None of his caddies ever stepped out of line until after they were gone.
Mm. Yeah. No, that's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. I just think there was a lot of things, though. I don't think the US team really knew where the whole hat waving came from.
Patrick Canley didn't know until he got off. I don't know what people were doing.
So I think really it was a defense mechanism. I think it was a big brother defense mechanism from Lukava. Like you with my guy, like, I'll take you all on.
Yeah.
I'll take you all right now.
Yeah.
I think that's Lukava. Like, New Jersey boy, like, no stranger to a bar scrap. Like, he's a bar scrapper.
He's a scrapper.
Like,
yeah,
that's the type of guy. He's like, you've got a whole crowd there, a whole opposing team. You're in away soil, and you don't give a... That's a scrapper.
Caddy scrap.
Well, I tell you who wasn't interested in the caddy scrap was Billy Foster was right there.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously...
I think Billy Foster, caddy, though, in a way, too, is... by far so much more professional than any other. I mean, they gave him that trophy. He's played, he's caddied in a million Ryder Cups.
I think that was his 15th Ryder
Cup. That's a lot of Ryder Cups, carrying someone's golf bag.
I know.
And I think he, like you said, the Europeans, they just cherish it so much that he's not going to step out of line for Luke Donald. There's a bit more respect, maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, it made it spicy because really up until that point, there wasn't much... It was a bit one-sided, and I've watched those Ryder Cups when they get one-sided, and they aren't much fun to watch when you're getting battered. I remember watching Medina and watching Keegan and Phil patting each other's bums and stuff like that, and like I hate this. Like, I literally hate this.
No bum touching.
I don't leave each other's backsides alone. So
Ryder Cup's over.
It's over.
Season's coming to an end in the North. American northern part of America,
northern states.
It's too cold. It's cold already. We just had Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's freezing.
It's freezing. So that means one thing for you.
I can't wait.
Off season.
I'm so happy it's
done. Oh my god!
Honestly, my favorite time of the year is October, start of October, and like I can start making a plan, a winter plan. I told you, it's literally right here. That's that last.
He's got a spreadsheet, a proper one.
Proper one.
I will say, off-season plans for the golf, this year, I'm going to stop saying I will say, but this year is the best I've played ever.
Mm-hmm.
My handicap, my goal was to get in, to be a one. My handicap got to a one, went back up a wee bit. It's come back down. Some good, some bad. There's a lot more easier for me to pick off to go, okay, this is what I need to work on. Obviously, I know I need to get faster, but... We know what the reason for that. But I know there's certain things I'm like, man, I'm just so bad. Not bad at, but if it tidied up a little bit more, could I get to the scratch? Maybe. Maybe. It's too much pressure to be that low of a handicap, I'll tell you that.
Self-imposed. That's a mental barrier you need to
get over. Totally.
I think you need to let that one go. You actually need to set your goal beyond that, right?
So you get to like a plus one.
Yeah.
You're
right. Shoot for the moon and reach the stars. Right,
I'll tell you, the day I got into 1.9, I had my 2-day member guest. The next, I said to the guy that is a teaching pro at the club, I was like, too much pressure. I'm going to play so badly tomorrow. Mm. Obviously, that's the worst thing you could say to yourself. Next day, 82 after shooting 73. Like, I'm a mental case. I know that. But yeah, you're right. I need to make my goal for even a lower handicap to let the bad odd day of being in the ones and have a crappy round of golf.
The best players in the world have all shot in the 80s at some point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We are not going to confuse ourselves with the best players in this building. Right?
So, yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Like, I think, again, back to putting ego to one side and realizing that it for what it is, you're just trying to do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's if you can think of it like one foot in front of the other. It's as simple as that. The only way you can run a marathon is to put one foot in front of the other. Don't think about the finish line.
Yeah.
You just got to be one foot in front of the other, right? So, and there's a process to that. There's a process to, you know, eating an elephant one bite at a time. And you've got to have a plan, right? Because at some point it's going to get difficult. And that's where a plan helps, because you've got to have, you know, things. And that's where you talk about you being a nutcase. I'm a nutcase as well, in an analytical sense. Like, I need to have analytics on my side, and I need to understand exactly where my game is at from a strokes game perspective. I need Marco's data. I need to have, you know, 5 elements of improvement that I'm going to look at over the winter: swing instruction, speed production, short game, putting, strength and condition, right?
It's impressive.
Yeah, like I have like speed production, I have my date goals. I have between the 9th of October and the 4th of December. That's my first 8-week period, 116 miles an hour. From 11th of December, so a week off, just let the body reset. 11th of December to the 5th of February, we're up at 121. And then from the 12th of February to the 8th of April, which will take us pretty much the start of the season, I want to be 126. So I'm looking for 5 miles an hour gain every block in order to get to the season where I want to be. One from where I am today to 126 feels massive. Can I go from where I am today to 116? Like, I was swinging at 116 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I know that's doable. If I put in the legwork to build the foundation of speed, can I go from then 116 to 121? I know I can, right? So, like, thinking of it that way, it's achievable. I know it's achievable. It's set out in a timeline that makes sense to me. I can buy into my own process at that point, et cetera, et cetera. I was sharing with you earlier, I've actually already done an effective what's in the bag for 2024. Sorry. Now, whether the heads stay what they are, like, I know the specs, I know the set makeups, I know the courses. I've played tournament golf this year, which I've not done in years. Mm-hmm. So I know the clubs that helped me, I know the ones that didn't really help me. I already know what I'm going to play next year.
Yeah.
Now, whether there's certain models, anything other than that's a bonus. That's the way I'm looking at it. If that was the 14 clubs for next, actually 16 clubs, there's a 2-iron and a 5-wood combo, there's a 4-hybrid and a 4-iron combo or option to trade out. If I go into next year and that's my 16 clubs of choice, over the moon.
Yeah.
If something comes out that's better than that.
Listen, it's inevitable. Before December 25th this year, I guarantee you and I, in our basements or in a golf bag in our houses, we will have probably 3 new drivers to our spec. We'll have a couple fairy woods. We'll have a few putters. We'll probably definitely know a couple sets of wedges. And we look at that and go, wow, that's great, right? And it's cool to have. And don't get me wrong, I love gear. Who are you kidding? We were talking, I like my whole setup, but I was like, oh, maybe I'll change this, maybe change that. For what reason? Other than I do want a new driver because it's been too long.
That's where I was last year. Like, kind of whole, like, oh, you know, I like my gear, but I could change. I actually think, again, back to having a process. This to me is much more rigid in a framework than it was for me last year. Like, it was just fun to change. Like, we would have fun with you guys and, you know, became a bit of a, like a thing. Like,
well, when we did the what's in the bags, people were like, oh, are we updating this tomorrow because Ian's changed?
And yeah.
There were times, literally we were done filming and be like, I'm going to change this. Yeah. And we'd all laugh, but that is the name of the game. We do tinker. But you're right. If you have your set in stone, the 10 commandments or the 16 commandments of the clubs.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
We know where we're at. Lofts, lies, swing weights, shafts, tipping, everything's in there. The blueprint for the set is in there. And I think that is a big part of, for next year, for me, getting comfort in, and obviously the clubs I'm using, the ball flight that I'm achieving. You know, this year was a bit of a, I don't know if a learning curve or sort of, it was useful to do some changing, see what worked, what didn't. That's certainly in it for me. So what do you think in terms of, like, you know, when you see like an off season plan like that, is that something you would do?
Here's the problem. I don't love to practice.
Yeah.
But, and I've said this, if I could turn my passion for playing through the season into a passion for practicing, how much better can my game get? It could get very good. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like when it's dumb. I don't know why I don't love to practice. I just can't hit balls for hours and hours and hours. And I don't need to.
I think that's the key. You know, work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to be lost on a Sunday. So you're obviously how much you've played this year and you've kind of lived at the club.
I was lost this weekend.
I know.
Two days of no golf. I was like, oh, geez. This is not good.
So, you know, I think making that part of your routine. Listen, let's set up a Sunday match. Let's play here and let's set it up. We have a course that we
auto putt
play at. Sure, whatever you want. But like, it's somewhere to keep your game. You know, keep you accountable, score wise and stuff like that. You know, I think for you, there's definitely a difficult part because the winter you just kind of tune out. I mean, our first night in the winter league last year with the boys, you're like, I'm done. Three holes in, you're like, I'm done.
And it's not that I don't believe in the technology. It's not that. That's not that part. I just don't love hitting balls. Like, to me, that's not real golf. And I know, geez, places in Korea, that is the only golf they have.
That's
golf. So yeah. I just need to get comfortable with doing it more and more.
For sure.
But that's the goal. That's the goal. The goal is, and this is going to sound crazy to people, but if I could practice twice a week, that'd be a massive improvement.
Oh, massive.
Massive. And I think on a Sunday, like, we have the two bays plus the putting green. Generally Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, there might not be anyone here. You could have a putting setup. You could have a speed bay, and then you could just have a hitting bay. You know what I mean? You could set up a little circuit of, because if you grind it over 25 putts on a Sunday for the next 8 weeks, you're gonna be a pretty damn good putter by the end of 8 weeks. You'll be more, I'm not gonna say you're gonna make everything, but you'll be more comfortable over that putter. You tweak some loft and lies if needed to. I mean, we have all the technology. You and I have access to all the technology we need,
everything we could ever need and dream of.
I mean I was looking at the other day, I've got a wedge with a different grip on. I'm like, I'm a yogi, this should be all the same. You've asked me about specs, and lately I've kind of neglected specs just to go and play, like, just throw it in the bag and go and play. So this winter is...
Got to tighten those screws.
You need to know exactly point to point what my equipment's like. practice. If it's twice a week, that's massive. To be honest with you right now, if it's once a week, but it's productive practice, then I think it would make a huge difference.
I came in on Sunday and kind of had kind of what I'd consider my first off-season practice session, and there was a bit of an evaluation on where I was with my technique, my delivery, shot shape, speed, etc. And kind of, okay, an evaluation of where everything's at. And this was by far for me the best starting point I've ever had in terms of where my game is going into the off season, where I'm going to start working and improving it, which is awesome. And that's what's going to allow me to do some other things. And short game, speed, those are two things. My number one and two goal are to drive it better and putt better. That's my top two goals. I need to stop hitting so many mid irons, right? It's the best part of my game by a long way. If I look at my Arcus data, it'll tell me that based off of, I think I set my my strokes gain data off of a plus four handicap.
Right.
I gain 2.5 strokes around versus actually I'm positive in strokes gained off of a Tour Pro with irons. So for me, that tells me, well, my driving can't be that bad because your iron play can't be good enough to set up that level of strokes gained if you drive it like garbage. Right,
yeah,
so it must be okay, but speed would be great to obviously head up a bit further, capitalising some other scoring opportunities. And I've moaned about it all year. The putter's got to improve.
Yeah. Yeah, the putter definitely, it definitely can improve. Yeah. I mean, it all can improve. Even people might not understand this, but in the studio that we're recording this podcast, I have a gym membership across the street that I have not been to in the last 8 months. That's a bad excuse not to go.
Well, I mean, yeah. Again, I spoke to a friend about this earlier on who helps me with some sort of health and wellness stuff, etc. I actually think it's a deterrent having a gym next to your work because it's so easy. When I'm there, I'm pulled to be here.
Yeah.
I struggle mentally with that. I'm like, oh, I'll skip out the last, you know, exercise or last few sets. I need to get back to work. Look at the time. If I'm at the gym, away and I'm not close, it's way easier to commit the time to it. So I actually don't think that's a help in something that we're going to...
It's good. I'll save some money.
Deal with that. I heard you've got somewhere you can go, so...
Yeah. It's not the nicest place, but it'll do.
It'll do. We'll slam it. So lots of travel, Michael. Lots of new gear. You know, we're in that product release season where we're starting to talk about next year's line. I think next year's going to be an interesting one from a product standpoint because... we've seen some, we've seen some big releases already from Titleist with their irons. Mm. TS, something's going to come in the kind of midsummer, but really we're going to see TaylorMade woods. We're going to see Callaway woods. One of those we've already seen and I'm excited about, really actually excited about.
Cobra.
No ping. One ping, maybe.
Who else? I mean, I know TaylorMade's definitely got some fresh irons coming out. There's obviously something with a ball, maybe.
Fresh irons?
Yeah.
What do you know? Because P790s, P770s have just refreshed. The blade, what do you know?
P770 minus a few numbers.
Okay.
It'll be interesting. I know, obviously we can tell there's some fresh grooves coming for Srixon, Cleveland Srixon Group.
Some new wedges?
Yep. What else? No, I think that's... I mean, obviously there's fresh, Vokies coming in the new year, which will be good.
Is this year two of SM9?
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Well, that is crazy.
So yeah, lots of new gear, lots of travel. We're definitely going to California to be with the Titleist people, Carolinas to be with the TaylorMade people, and a few maybe other dabbles of trips in there somewhere else. So it's going to be
some travel. Some golf in the road?
Definitely some golf in the road. We had a call with Titleist today. We're like, we play around the golf one day. For you guys, the content.
It's for you. I love the content. Everything's for you guys.
I love the camera.
Now, I think if we can get, minimum one a month, the monthly match. So I want it to be the monthly match. I want it to be minimum one on-course match a month.
Perfect. Whether that's good for January, February, March when it's freezing up here.
Exactly. It's an excuse to get away.
It's for the business.
Exactly. It's for the views. It's for you guys.
You're welcome.
I know. That one will be fun.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, speaking of fun things to do, download our podcast.
Yeah.
This is a contest. If you've listened this far in the podcast and watched God this far you. In the podcast, thanks for sticking around. When this podcast is released, as you're listening to now, download it. It helps us with the podcast, helps with our viewers. If you could rate it, that'd be even better. Five stars only. If you have anything else, please email.
Your complaints to...
Complaints at takecomplaintdepartment.com. But the best thing to do is if you share this podcast... This episode, especially on your stories on Instagram, it's very easy to do through the phone. Tag Ian and I. Whoever does it, we'll pick a winner.
Yeah.
And we're going to think of something. We've got some stuff kicking around that is actually...
We think we might have a limited edition driver, special edition. that is really quite unique, really, really special. One of the best products of 2023. We do have it in a limited color, special casing. Mm-hmm.
Looks like a bazooka.
It's impressive. It's impressive. It's probably in value, it's, you know, well over $1,400-$1,500 in value, and probably even more nicely because of obviously the limited nature of it. So
plus Ian will sign the case to lucky winner.
I wouldn't vandalize your nice new product, but Mike's been practicing his autograph, so maybe he'll do one on there.
Anyways, share it on your story, tag us both. You have a chance to win it. We're going to try to do something every week for you guys, to keep you guys engaged with us. If you have any comments or whatever, please, you can send us DMs, but comment on the post that you see when this podcast is released, and let us know who you want us to interview.
Yeah,
we definitely have some guests coming. I know we keep saying we've got guests coming, but the podcast studio is finally kind of up and running. A couple more panels to add to the wall.
Acoustic paneling.
This is good. This is, I know it's not episode one, but it feels like episode one.
It does feel like episode one. It's episode one of the new studio. We'll call it the, this is our unofficial new start.
Yeah.
Which is excellent. This is exciting. Okay, guys, have a great week. We will be here next week in your, hopefully AirPods or however you listen to the podcast on your streaming device, on your streaming platform. We look forward to being back with you next week, and take care. We'll see you soon.